Rhythm is a beautiful fever, catch your breath now. If you ever wanna make stop and listen, to Radio Rivers FM Stereo. Good afternoon and welcome to Spotlight. Spotlight is a Radio Rivers weekly current affairs program on 99.1 FM, the voice of experience. Our guest today is no other person than Dr. Uche Ekerewajero. He's here in our studio to talk on the need to preserve our local languages, particularly as it has to do with the translation of the Bible. Doc, you are welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
On the program with me is my colleague, Dick Sarne. We could dig you also welcome to the program.
A pleasure this afternoon once again.
And I'm Phyllis Keke, moderating. Doc.
Yes.
Traditionally, it is the reserve of this program for our listener to know who our guest is. We are talking about who is Dr. Uche Ekerewajero.
Okay. I am a senior translation consultant with the Seed Company, working now on the Obolo project. We just had the whole Bible dedicated last year on the 24th of May, 2014. At the moment, I am involved in four other projects. I'm working on the Bekwara project in Cross River State, Kajuk, and also Lokor. All three of those in Cross River States, working on Old Testament projects. And I'm also working on the Ibani New Testament in River State. Ibani is spoken by the Boni people. So that is what I am. That's what I am doing.
Doc, are you married?
Yes, I am married, yes.
You're married to who? And do you have children?
My wife is a Dutch lady. Maria and Aaron. Yes, we have five foster children, and we live here in Nigeria. And my wife is in charge of literacy. Wherever we are working, we work together as a team. She works on literacy, and I work on translation. We are both consultants.
Yeah, Doc.
Yes.
From your profile available to us, you are well read.
Yes.
You are a linguist.
Yes.
You are a construction engineer.
Yes.
How does this happen?
Well, I went to the United States to study construction engineering. I was sponsored by my state government in those days. All of Obolo, Andoni and Eastern Obolo local government were together in the then southeastern state, which became Cross River State. And then I was awarded an overseas scholarship to study construction engineering at the Lawrence Technological University in Southfield, Michigan. And about 6 months before I completed my construction engineering, I felt God calling me through our church, the Highland Park Baptist Church, Southfield, Michigan, through a Wycliffe pilot, Bernie May, into Bible translation. And so when that happened, I was sent to Britain, to the SIL school there, Wycliffe Technical Wing, SIL. They have a school there where they train people to work in different languages in the world. And I was sent to Britain because that SIL school was responsible for African languages. And that's also where I met my wife, who is from the Netherlands. So that's how I changed from construction engineering to Bible translation.
Okay, you've been into this business of being a consultant in,
yes,
Bible translation,
yes,
as far back as 1995.
Yes.
Actually,
1989
I was there. 1989.
Yes.
How has it been? How your experience in these projects?
Well, the Bible is the Word of God, and when we are trained to to translate it, to check it, especially as consultants. We have special training, and so we had to do linguistics training. We Greek and Hebrew in Bible College. All of those things were essential. And then I was sent. I joined the Nigeria Bible Translation Trust in 1983, and my wife and I. And then we were sent to work on my language, the Obolo language. The committee was already formed. They started a language committee in 1978. And then by 1981, the Bible Translation Wing, Bible Translation Committee was formed. And my wife and I, we came back from abroad in 1983. And joined the Nigeria Bible Translation Trust, and we were sent to work on Obolo, my language. And by 1991, we had completed the New Testament, and it was sent to South Korea for publication, for printing. And it came out and was dedicated in 1992. And, I don't know what else you want to know.
What about you're talking about a language that you're talking about Obolo language now.
Yes, that's right.
You are going around the clock ensuring that language is internationally, because your profile also shows that at the international level you write so much about it, you talk so much about it.
Yes.
But yet at the home front, not many takes this language serious. Even on the streets, if you greet somebody in Ogoni, in Obolo or Wele, he or she will turn to you as if, what are you speaking? Mm-hmm. Yet, you are a man championing the cause of this language. What is your advice to people who would not want to take Obolo seriously?
Or how would you want to react to that?
Yes, I think it's a matter of ignorance, because what makes... the closest identity of any human being is, first of all, his mother tongue. His culture is embedded in the mother tongue. And, when I studied at Birabi Memorial Grammar School, and when I hear somebody speaking Ogoni in the morning and I say, Deira, they look at me,
yeah,
and immediately they click to me. I don't understand why anybody would react negatively when you speak to them in their mother tongue. There are so many advantages of developing the mother tongue, which we will go into later. As much as you want to.
Even if we have to go into all that in course of the program,
yes.
Are you comfortable that, or are you aware that the indigenous languages, particularly in Nigeria and River State in particular, are going extinct? Are you aware of that?
Well, I am aware that some languages are becoming extinct, but not all, as a matter of fact. Languages, the culture of an ethnic group is embedded in the language. So when the people are together, they speak their languages. If you are in Ogoni land, you are in Obolo land, you speak your language. I know that when people are in the cities, that's when they want to be speaking, in the English language, which everybody will understand. But I know also that in churches, the tendency is to use English, even in the local areas, wherever they notice that there is one foreigner among them. This is something that we have been encountering in Obolo land, and we have been discussing with pastors, because the word of God it is not for nothing that it was written in these two languages, Greek and Hebrew.
Hebrew, yeah.
Yes. It's not for nothing that it was written in those languages. And the Hebrew culture embedded in the Hebrew language brings a certain impact that is not available to other speakers of the language. When the Hebrew person hears the Hebrew Bible being read in Hebrew language. The same thing also we have seen in Obolo. When Obolo people hear the Bible read to them in their own language, it speaks to them. To start with, there is a lot of similarities. I mean, there are a lot of similarities between African cultures and the biblical Hebrew cultures. And when you read the English Bible, those cultural issues tend to evade your attention. People don't understand them very well. But by the time they read it in their own mother tongue, they do understand it more than they had ever understood it before. That was one of the things that we saw Obolo pastors. They were saying, now the word of God has become very clear to us. I mean, pastors who have gone through theological colleges. You know, the language of the Bible is a ritual language. It's not spoken in science. It's not spoken on the streets. And those ritual languages, they are embedded in the cultures of the peoples. And that is why it is very important to have the Bible in the languages of the people. Actually, in Obolo also, many people like to hear the Bible being read to them in Obolo language. And I've also seen that in the other languages also where I've worked. I know that people understand it better, yes.
Yeah, Doc, from your background,
yes,
you speak Obolo.
Yes.
You speak English.
Yes.
You speak Hebrew.
Yes.
You speak Ibibio.
Yes.
You speak Igbo,
uh-huh.
Hausa, and even the New Testament Greek.
I don't speak New Testament Greek, but I do understand.
Okay,
yes.
Okay, cool. In a family setting,
yes,
where you have the husband, the man and the woman coming from different linguistic background,
mm-hmm.
What happens in that family?
Well, my wife, I will start from there. She's
because
I fit that uniform.
Okay.
Yes. My wife is Dutch. When she came, she learned our language, Obolo language,
okay.
And we speak together in Obolo. And but if there are any secrets that we don't want anyone to understand, my wife also understands some Hebrew, so we can switch over to Hebrew. We are free to do that. And in any family setting, that happens, you know, especially when they are not from the same language group. It depends on the interest. When my wife visited us, my mother visited us when we were in Jos, our church people were watching us, and my wife was translating the English sermons to my mother. And then after a while, wives who were married to non-speakers of their mother tongue, they came up and they were asking, how did you do that? So that's who we are.
But don't you think that these linguistic differences
yes.
are actually affecting the children? Because the children cannot be able to marry the two or speak them fluently or even...
Yes, it depends on where you are. If you are in a village setting, where the local language is used, and if one of you knows that language, you speak that language to the child. We have seen children who grew up, and especially when we were in Jos, we had a Cameroonian couple. They spoke their language. They spoke some French, and they also spoke English. And then the children, when they played with their friends outside, they were speaking Hausa. It took that child quite some time to be able to speak, but by the time she was able to speak, she could speak Hausa, she could speak English, she could speak French, and then also the parents' language. So we lose a lot when we don't teach our children the language of, you know, of their parents.
You are saying we lose a lot.
Yes,
and it is very certain that because if we are not realistic about what we are talking about,
yes.
Our listener out there will think that it is just as it is. The truth of the matter is that these languages are only spoken at the rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I step out of my community and I'm resident in the urban, like, okay, talk about Port Harcourt. Mm-hmm. Now my wife, my children be with me here.
Mm-hmm.
So what business do they have talking or speaking Kana language in a city like this? What business do they have? And then you see children grow with these, and then we're having a lot of problems today. Children not understanding their background, where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So this is one critical issue that borders so much on our identity today. And here we are talking. Not so many will see reason in speaking the language, teaching their children, and particularly in our schools today. You will see, you'll agree with me that when you grew up,
yes,
okay, mm-hmm. Now vernacular was used,
yes,
as part of the language
to teach the children. It was part of the school curriculum.
Yes, mm-hmm. But now it is nowhere. Mm-hmm. So how do you react to that, sir?
Well, I'm very happy that you said it's a critical problem, and you used the word problem.
Mm.
You have your identity as Kana, not just because your parents and your relatives are Kana, but one of the things is that your language is Kana,
mm.
And then the Kana culture is embedded in your language.
Yeah.
Before I go, let me say one thing. It has been proven scientifically that when a child learns to read and write, the basic literacy in his or her mother tongue, the language that is spoken in the home, and then at a later stage makes a transition or learns English alongside, that child does better. The brain is developed in such a way that the person who just learns English alone, especially in the cities, it doesn't have that capacity to develop up to that that level, because in the city you just talk about the ordinary things like what we are talking about now, the language of the Bible, for instance, the ritual language is completely lost to the children who grow up in the cities, and that added ability to understand, you know, that added cognitive ability is missing in the child. That child is really losing out. And by the time the child grows up, and then by the time the parents die, the child has no home. It's just a Port Harcourt city dweller. That's it. It says, oh, my parents came from Kana, and then that's the end. But you see, Nigeria has the third highest language density in the whole world. The highest one is Papua New Guinea. And then the second highest is Indonesia, and the third is Nigeria, and for us it's a treasure. What are we doing with it? Are we just going to throw it away? 535 different languages. Are we just going to throw them away? Then we lose. And that when our children are taught in English without these basic rudiments of culture, the children do lose quite a lot. It's a loss.
Okay, Doc.
Yes, sir.
Happily today we have a complete Obodo Bible.
Yes.
What is the next target of Obodo Bible Translation Organization for especially Obodo people?
Very good. At this time, something happened when we started the project. After we established the writing system, the orthography, you know, we first of all had to do dialect survey. We chose a particular dialect. And then we established the writing system. Another scholar had worked on it before, one Nicholas Faraklas. And then, so when I came in, we were the ones that, you know, we reviewed it, and then we did the dialect survey and came up with an orthography, an amended orthography. And then my wife started to write books for teaching in primary schools under the Rivers Readers Project in those days, that Professor K. Williamson was heading. And by that time, too, the federal government just had this federal government policy on education as it affects the language of the immediate environment. And they allowed us to teach Obolo in schools. By the time the children who started learning in Obolo in primary 1 got to primary 6, there was an essay contest at the local government headquarters. We were then under the Bani local government, where there is a Bani, there is a Koro, there is a Pobo, and then Obolo. And then they were asked to write in English, to write an essay in English. All the three prizes, the first, second, and the third, were won by Obolo schools. Yes, because they learned to read, first of all, and to write in the Obolo language before transitioning into English. So you see, when that happens, when a child reads something in English that he doesn't understand, he quickly uses the dictionary.
Yeah.
But when you just bring up a child to just rote learn the language without any impact, they can just be, when you ask them to read, they're counting the letters. And another thing also did happen. There was one doctoral candidate by name Mrs. Abigail Afiesimama, also working under Professor Williamson, who was writing a dissertation at that time. And then her topic had to do with the implementation of that federal government policy as it affects, in education as it affects the language of the immediate environment.
Mm.
And her hypothesis was, she made the children of all the schools to write an essay in English. But her hypothesis was that the best performing school would be the Port Harcourt Urban Elite School, an example of the University of Port Harcourt Demonstration Primary School.
Mm.
And then the second best will be Port Harcourt Urban Poor, because they listen to the television, they watch the television, listen to radio, and when they go to school by bus, they speak Pidgin English, all English-based.
Okay.
And then the performance will diminish as you go away from Port Harcourt. And that, in those days, Bayelsa and Rivers State were together as one state. And then there were 13 local governments in Rivers State at that time. You know, this lady came to us in Ogbololand, and she made the children to write an essay, and the topic was my school. And then when they finished writing, she made them also to write it in Ogbolo language. And by the time she came to Port Harcourt, she put together a grading team, which was the final year students of the College of Education in Port Harcourt, giving them all the parameters.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time the essays were graded, true to the fact, the Port Harcourt Demonstration Primary School was the first.
Yeah.
And guess what happened? The second prize, the second was the Ogbolo School, our pilot school at Agana. And then the third was also an Ogbolo school.
Mm.
And then the fourth was a Port Harcourt Urban Poor. And the result diminished. The poorest was the farthest local government, the 13th removed.
Mm.
And then Ogbolo was the number 12, which means that we should have performed the second poorest, right?
Mm.
But we performed the second best and the third best.
Yeah.
And then because of this, actually, after the Ogbolo Bible, now I come to your question. People started to think, what do we do to maximize that result?
Mm.
And then we decided to start a bilingual school. And our board of trustees agreed that we should start it. And in fact, they said we must start it last year. So we started primary one last year. And this year we've already started primary two. The aim of it is to go up to the polytechnic. We will go finish primary school. It's going to be bilingual. We start a secondary technical school, and then we will go to the polytechnic, so that the children will learn to use the facilities, the natural facilities that we have in Ogbololand. And then we are aiming at improving things like fisheries, forestry, even oil cleaning and things like that, petroleum technology. All those things will be embedded in the polytechnic by the time we reach it. And so Ogbolo people have actually started this by themselves. And it is on the move at the moment. Yes, if you have any other questions you want to ask about that, we'll tell you.
We'll come to that.
Okay.
it's laudable, and I'm sure people hearing and then listening will always mark this as one event that is supposed to be emulated, as it were.
Yes.
But importantly, I will ask, the level as it is now, are you saying that other elites of Andoni or the Ogbolo, as it were, are carried along with this and then with the understanding of the people? Because with what you're saying now, this aspect of the schools coming in the bilingual, as you're talking about, is capital intensive.
Yes.
And then which also will involve the local government and some other stakeholders.
Yes.
So how are other elites and other stakeholders carried along in the scheme of things?
Well, the elites, the stakeholders, the local government councils, and then, in fact, the poorest of Obolo people, Andoni, have been involved in this thing right from when we started the Bible translation. We went, as a matter of fact, from village to village. And then, you know, when people think that they don't have any personality, and then you come up with something that they have, which is very important, it boosts their ego. So what we saw is Obolo people all together, you know, whether in Cross River, that's in Eastern Obolo local government, or in Andoni local government in the River State, and the churches and the elites, we are all bonded. Yeah. Everybody is looking for an opportunity to take part in it. As a matter of fact, I know maybe you ask about funding, but let me just give you a hint, because your question borders on it. Even the chiefs, who are always asking to be given, the Obolo chiefs came together, and then they also
donated.
Yes, yes, especially
that's interesting.
It's very interesting.
Yeah,
they have been donating. You know, especially the ones from the Eastern Obolo, they were the ones that started it. Okay. But the ones from the River State and the local government, when I think the oil companies gave them some subvention, they took out what they call tithe from it.
Okay.
And they gave us a huge amount of money in those days. And it's not only the chiefs, the churches are our main financial mainstay. And then the elites, they are donating also. People call us and ask what is going on. And when the whole Bible was to be printed, we did have some support from abroad. For example, the Weekly Bible Translators, they sponsored 50% of the Obolo Bible, the Protestant one. But you know, our Bible has both Protestant and Catholic versions.
Yeah.
And when Obolo people heard that others were sponsoring them, it spurred them on, and they were asking, if other people are doing this, what about us? So they sponsored the rest of it, including the Catholic Bible. And then by the time we got the money for the printing of the Bibles, we told them when the Bibles would be finished, there's nowhere to store them because the office is not big enough.
Yeah.
And then that we needed to build a Bible house. So people contributed money. Obolo elites contributed. In fact, some of them would come secretly to see whether their money has been put into use.
Yeah.
Yeah, without asking us anything, they would just come there to see. And when they see it, they were very satisfied. In 2 weeks, the block work was completed. And in 2 months, the roofing and everything was done.
Wow.
Yes, that is the spirit. And I have been a director in the Nigeria Bible Translation Trust, and we've been trying to teach other languages to do the same. But, we have not had any equal to Obolo.
Okay, something captivated my interest, which has to do with one of the papers you presented.
Yes.
Or you wrote abroad.
Yes.
Where you talked about the similarities between Obolo and Hebrew language.
Yes, that's right.
What informed that, and how do you come about the similarities?
Okay, it was a discourse and cultural similarities between Obolo and Biblical Hebrew. There's something they call collective and individual responsibility, right? When government money enters your pocket, you will keep it. You will not give it because it belongs to everybody. But if somebody takes your money, you will pursue that person, you know, until he returns the money to you. What we see there is that the very first thing was in the Old Testament, when they are given the Ten Commandments, God was on the mountain, and then he was addressing the entire Israeli audience. But when he says, "You shall not kill," or "Thou shall not kill," which is the King James English, he used the singular form. You see, because he wants all the individuals in the group to feel the weight of the commandment, isn't it?
Yeah.
If all the individuals feel the weight of the commandment, then they will obey the commandments, and it will become a collective issue. That also we see in Obolo. When you are telling your children you want to go away, and you say, I am going fishing now, you know, before I come, do this or do that. You tell them the thing on individual basis. And so linguistically, there is a similarity there. And there are also other similarities in terms of the culture. When people are, you know, when you disobey the laws of God, there are some associated punishments, repercussions that accompany those disobedience. And in the Hebrew language, there is a word that is used there, the Hebrew asham, which is translated into English as guilt. You know, you are found guilty in the courts of law, so then you are punished, or your conscience blames you. Yeah. But there is one thing in the Hebrew culture. Once you break that the natural law of God, you are guilty, one, and then it is associated with some punitive repercussions.
Okay.
And then that punishment, unless you perform a particular sacrifice to waive it, it will never leave you.
Mm.
For example, if you slapped your father in the Bible, if a Hebrew young man would slap his father, he will have to offer a sin offering, and then all the grain offering, the wine offering that accompanies it, and then on top of that, he has to offer a particular offering called a guilt. It's called a guilt offering.
Mm.
It is when you offer that guilt offering that you made the atonement. The same thing also applies in Obolo. If an Obolo young man will slap his father on the face, he will have to offer all kinds of sacrifices, but then there is one that he has to offer before the father would declare in front of the whole public, I forgive you. Otherwise, his son will slap him too. And then if his son doesn't perform that sacrifice, his own son will also slap him too. And that concept in Hebrew is called asham. In Obolo language, it is called awo. So when you steal, you know that awo is on your head, and you can't avoid it unless you make an atonement. You see, these are some of those cultural issues. There are also other things that I wrote in that paper, but you know, this is not the time for it. Yes.
Okay. If you are just tuning in, the station is Radio Rivers 99.1 FM, the voice of experience.
Yes.
And our guest is an international translation consultant, Dr. Uche Ekerewajero.
Yes.
He's here talking on translation of indigenous language, particularly into the Bible, and as it affects Obolo language and others. And my colleague is still Dick Saronewiku.
Yeah. Pleasure.
If you want to contribute to the program, please call the telephone number 081-360-46040. I repeat, the number is 081-360-46040. Please, don't flash, because we wouldn't have the time to call you back.
Yes.
Doc.
Yes. There was something I wanted to add.
Okay.
Yes. At this moment...
Before you add that.
Okay. Yes.
Hello. Hello?
Yes, go on.
Okay.
At this moment, Obolo Projects, is Obolo Language and Bible Translation Organization, is also on the web. We have a website.
Okay.
Yes, we've just developed it. And the name of the...
Okay. Hello?
Hello?
Okay, Voice of Democracy, you are welcome to the program.
Yeah, my questions are these. I want to ask our guest, not teaching of our indigenous languages in our primary schools, secondary schools, and maybe tertiary institutions. I want him to explain, the effect in terms of development to our communities, our state, and our country. I want you to explain that. And secondly, he's talking about some contribution people need. And if you also speak on why maybe buy some facilities in terms of developing the schools, or any other thing that could be developed, because people don't have that mentality in this part of the world. We're in the Western world that people want to, individuals want to do that. So let him speak on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Doc.
Yes.
I hope you got what he said.
Well, a lot depends. People don't just donate money into the air. Like when I was talking about the Bolo people donating, even the elites, I should really have mentioned this when the Andoni Cluster Development Board.
Hello.
Which is, supported by, okay.
Hello.
Good evening.
Good afternoon.
This is Pastor Gideon. I am impressed. I just turned on my radio now.
Pastor Gideon calling from where?
I am calling from Boda right now.
Okay.
Boda City.
Okay.
Yes. So I want to know whether this man has authored any book relating to a translation of Bible, Hebrew, whether he has authored any book that relates to this, so that I will know.
Okay, thank you very much.
Well, you should just go on the internet. You will find all the things that I've written. I don't think I can remember the names of books. My articles, and there's a book, and Obolo, and stuff. No. Go on the internet. You will see it.
Okay.
Yes. You were talking about that website.
Yes.
So that people
website.
Get to
yes.
take advantage
yes,
of
yes, that's what I wanted to
yeah.
say. Yes, you can go there. The name of the website is Ida Obolo, I-D-A, then O-B-O-L-O. That's the name of the website. And the address is www.obololanguage.org. www.obololanguage, straight one word or small letters.
Yeah.
Yes, .org. When you are in there, you will see all the things that we are doing.
Okay.
Yes. So I was saying, there are a lot of people who have interest, but I said you don't just contribute into the air. If you have a body like we have, Obolo Language and Bible Translation Organization, it is a body that is in charge of the Obolo language, and. When we ask people for assistance and they give money to us, as I said, we put that money into use. If you're giving money for a building of a school, like the schools that we are talking about now, it will be put into the school building. So when you come, you will see it. You see, so that is the thing that we are talking about. Yes.
Hello.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What is your name and? Where are you calling from?
I am Saint Justin Otiko.
Calling from where?
Where are you calling from? I'm calling from Port Harcourt.
Okay.
The man that is mentioned, I have not mentioned the community that he comes from in Obolo. What to know? Where?
Okay, I'm from Amadaka in Eastern Obolo Local Government in Akwa Ibom State. But my wife and I, we live at Agutobolo. We've been living there since 1983.
Okay, Doc.
Yes.
We are talking about Bible translation here.
Yes.
So, what kind of positive impact has Bible translation had on the spread of the gospel?
Very good. As I started when I was sharing at the very beginning.
Before we take that, let's... Hello.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. Welcome to the program.
Conway Dunbar calling for Port Harcourt.
Okay, question or comment?
Yeah, thank you very much. Well, I just want to appreciate the guest in the station.
Yeah.
You know, having a Bible in someone's dialect looks very interesting. Because there are people who cannot be able to read the Bible in English. And Bible is a message that needs to get to everywhere and everybody. So if a Bible can be translated into an indigenous language, it is a good development for people. So that the people that are unable to speak English can be able to read the Bible in their own dialect. Thank you very much, Comrade Tombari from Port Harcourt.
Thank you very much. Okay. We are talking of talking about the impact of Bible translation into
We have seen a deeper growth of the church. As I stated, the pastors in Ogbololand were saying, now we understand the Bible better. We have seen more commitment, people giving their lives to Christ as a result of understanding the Bible better.
Better understanding.
And yes, and then also wishing to go to do whatever the Bible tells them to do, just because they now understand it better. In fact, it's very difficult to quantify, but we have seen quite a lot. But you know, the Bible translation goes along with literacy development, and then there is development in preparing people for heaven, and also development in developing the land where we live. So, like now, we are working on the Bolo dictionary, and that one too will come up later.
Interesting.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Aaron.
Yes, sir.
We are talking very seriously on language.
Yes.
Now, how will you, discussing language as it affects the indigenous people now, now how will you advise our ministers of the gospel today? Because even when we don't have any stranger in our midst, just because an individual has gone to theological school, now he will use language, he will use English language in our local churches, not minding the age of people there. How funny. Do you see that? And then we're talking about impacting the life of the people.
Yes.
And then you think somebody, he's talking, somebody's interpreting. The person even interpreting do not even know what is interpreting.
That's correct.
So it's as if we're just doing mere ceremony. That's churches today. So yes. How do you react to that?
Yes. This is one thing that we have been trying to caution churches about, you know, right from when we were in JOS at the Nigeria Bible Translation Trust level. The best thing the work of a pastor is to impart the word of God to the church membership. And if the membership is 100%, local language speakers, the Bible, the sermons and all the readings should be done in that local language. And in fact, if there are foreigners, then you can get somebody to translate into English. If you went to Yoruba land today, the Yorubas, they do everything in Yoruba. And then if they notice that there are some non-Yoruba speakers, then they will translate into English. So this is something that even the Nigeria Bible Translation Trust, the Bible Society, and all of us, you know, that are working with Bibles, this is the principle that we preach to people. And then let me tell you one thing. This is a testimony. And it happened in Plateau State, in one of the languages. It was Mada language. The very first portion of scripture that was translated into that language was the Christmas story. And it was read. The pastor of the church was one of the translators. So he read that passage in Mada language. And after the service, he preached also in Mada. After the service, an elderly woman who has been in that church all the time and listening to everything in Hausa asked him a question. That passage that you read, were you reading from the Bible? She's been hearing the passage read to her in Hausa all the time without understanding. But this time, she understood it. And that woman gave her life to Christ, and shortly afterwards, she died. So the woman had a chance to hear the word of God in her language before God called her away.
Yeah.
Yes. So as a matter of fact, our pastors are not being fair to us. And I tend to understand, too, some of the things that they are going through. They cannot translate those terminologies, those theological terminologies. By the time you talk about justification, sanctification, all those things, if they will read them in the local languages, it will also help them, too, to understand what they are saying. And, of course, it will impact the church congregation. Because the language of the Bible, as I said, is a ritual language, and it's not spoken on the streets.
Yeah, Doug, from what we have identified as problems militating against language, indigenous language development and the groups in Nigeria, and particularly in Rivers State.
Yes.
Will you advocate the reintroduction of the study of the native dialect in the school curriculum?
Yes, that is what we want to see. And that is the one thing, it's one of the contributions of, you know, the low educational level. Especially in the local areas, you know, like in Kana and then in other language groups, if the subjects are taught in the local language and then you make a transition into English, as I've already shared the testimony with you,
okay. The
children will actually be better off. It is not for nothing that the federal government came up with that policy. As a matter of fact, it started in Britain. When the United Kingdom was coming together, and the people, the Welsh, they speak Welsh, you know, and they didn't understand English, so then they were taught in Welsh.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm Monde Monde from Abuja.
Okay.
So the speaker mentioned where we come from, Amataka, and we live at Abuja. In which community do they cite the local language and the Bible at mentioned often?
Thank you.
In which community? It is cited in a Gutobolo community. I think is it Alama area of Gutobolo, but you know it's in Gutobolo.
Okay.
Yes.
We're talking about reintroduction of
yes. Yes, it started with the Welsh, and they didn't understand English. So then the United Kingdom came up with a policy to train the people, to the Welsh people, to read and write first in Welsh before being trained into English. Welsh and English continued. And then Canada also saw it too, French and English. They did the same thing. And then in the United States with the American Indian languages, they did the same thing. Before long, United Nations adopted it. UNESCO adopted it. Then they made all of their elements, like the OAU, adopted it. Now it's African Union. It is through the OAU, the AU now, that the Nigerian government also adopted it. It is not for nothing. I think we are losing out a lot. We are missing a lot of development of the area, and then also development of the manpower, our children of today. When you make a child to just rote learn something, it doesn't know what that thing means. But when you make a child to read something in a language that he understands, he knows that reading and writing is a form of communication. As we are speaking now into the air, the people are listening to us, they are getting it, and then they are interacting with us. But if I was just rote learning, just saying things that they didn't understand. It's not communication.
So what you are saying invariably is that language has a place in national development.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, language has a place, especially the language of the immediate environment does have a place in national development. Yes.
Well, I am sure that with all of this you're talking about, if you have not been given now, you'll soon be given the chieftaincy title that goes with it and all. But then, importantly, sir, now, our children, in a way, are forced, I can use that word,
yes,
forced to write the Wayek, maybe you write Igbo language, Hausa, or Yoruba. Are you comfortable with this you are doing today, championing the Obolo language? Are you comfortable with this type of arrangement where somebody from Andoni, rather than writing in his language to assess his ability in both speaking or maybe spoken and written, then instead of him or her to write in her dialect, now he's forced to write Igbo, either Igbo, Hausa, or Yoruba?
Or even are you in German? Or
yes. Are you comfortable with that arrangement?
Well, as a matter of fact, maybe here in Port Harcourt, I don't know, but it's not very relevant to ask children to write, exams in on Hausa, Yoruba, and Igbo languages who are not speakers of that language. But if we are going to make these also among the languages, to put them among the languages that will be spoken and used for general communication in Nigeria, yes, then we should.
Doc, in yes. 1 minute,
yes.
What is your advice to Rivers people considering the number of languages being spoken in the state?
Rivers people, your language is a part of your identity. Develop it and use it. That's my advice. It will help you in whatever you want to become in the future.
On that note of advice, we come to the end of this edition of Spotlight on Radio Rivers 99.1 FM, the voice of experience. Our guest has been an international translation consultant, Dr. Uche Ekerawaji Ero. Doc, yes. Thank you for coming to our studio.
Thank you very much. It was a very special privilege. I am so thankful to especially the Obolo people in Andoni and the Eastern Obolo local government who are listening to us. I want to praise you for what you have done. You are very unique in the whole country. And then we are challenging all the other languages in River State to follow same. Thank you very much.
And from my colleague Dixon Renwiku.
Bye for now.
From my humble self, Felix Keki, who has been the anchorman, thank you for being there for us. Have a pleasant Sunday.